Well, let's turn to that incident in Acts, the end of Acts chapter 8, where this man from Ethiopia, this very influential individual, comes to faith in Jesus Christ. We're going to think about what that meant for him. At a conservative estimate, it is believed that some 44% of the population of Africa today is Christian in some shape or form. There has been, hasn't there, not in our own islands, there has been really, I suppose, in the last, 35 years, there has been a phenomenal growth in what is often called, and I hope never, God forbid, never derogatory at all, but in terms of praise to God, there's been incredible growth in what's known as the black churches. It's fascinating, isn't it, as well, that in the turmoil that's going on in the Anglican, worldwide Anglican communion, it is the churches of Africa that appear to be, more than anywhere else, holding to the faith of the gospel. Why? Why is that? Well, I'm sure there are many reasons. I just read a short while back, I was reading an African scholar, and he made this conjecture. Why is that so? And his simple conjecture was this. He says, look, I would say the reason is that in Africa, there has been a long history of recognizing the supernatural. There has been that openness to something beyond what we can just see and experience with our own, as it were, immediate physical faculties. I want to begin looking at the story of this Ethiopian eunuch with simply what happens when the incident begins. Luke isn't just a competent historian and a fantastic writer. He wrote deliberately. And here you've got Philip engaged in a ministry in Samaria where there are numerous people who have come to faith in Jesus Christ. And there is an incredible work going on of which he is right in the heart. And then suddenly you've got these words in verse 26. Now, an angel of the Lord spoke to Philip saying, arise and go toward the south along the road which goes down from Jerusalem to Gaza. This is desert. Why? Why does Luke put it that way? Well, first and foremost, Luke put it that way because that's the way it actually happened. Here's an historical account. Here's a story being told that hasn't been made up. Here is Luke saying, look, let me tell you how it was that the Church of Jesus Christ grew out of its Jerusalem roots and came out into the world. And here's one aspect, here's one story that I can tell you about. And here's the facts of what happened. That there was this man, Philip, engaged in a ministry. And suddenly, we're told that an angel of the Lord spoke to him and sends him on a journey, which he must have realized, well, he was told about, as Luke does, into the desert, into nowhere. Now, why that fact recorded? Well, okay, let me try to explain it this way. My granddaughter, my only one now, is just 15 months, so it's a delight suddenly to realize that you can start doing all the stupid things you did with your own kids, all the silly games you did. And she's just getting to that phase where, you know, you can do this. You love doing it, but you feel right daft, don't you know? Boo! Yeah, you know? Peekaboo. You ever played peekaboo? You know, what's behind here? I want to suggest to you the way to begin to understand what's happening here is that What we're being given is a peep behind the curtain. A peep behind the curtain. Because what Luke is doing is reminding his readers that Philip, like all the other the apostles and these Christians, it's this early story. Philip was engaged as a Christian, as every Christian man and woman still is, was engaged in something that actually the average person doesn't really think about. And if they do, they think it's a load of mumbo jumbo. And that is that Philip is confronted here as a man of faith in God with the reality of the supernatural. The reality of the fact that actually there is more to life than what we can see and what is just around us. The story of Christianity is a story of the reality of the supernatural breaking into place and time and into individual lives. You cannot possibly begin to understand Christianity. And I suspect even this evening, there's probably some of you here this evening who are very aware of Christian things. Maybe perhaps have got even Christian parents. And as yet you're not Christians. And I say to you this evening, one of the reasons is that there is this, in your mind, there is not this belief, there is not this acceptance that the reality of the supernatural is. I've never seen it, but they took this new program's coming back on, isn't it? Mouldy and Sculler, you know, the truth's out there. We're not talking here about that kind of nonsense that people sometimes talk, you know, about religion. But the reality is that the story of Christianity is a story of men and women whose lives have been dramatically changed and altered when they suddenly become aware of the reality that there is a God, and there is a God out there, and there is a world out there beyond what actually they can see. It's the story of Abraham. Living in Haran, and Ur of the Chaldeans, and soaked in idolatry, and suddenly God speaks and calls him out. It's the story of Jacob. Deceiver. Fraud. And suddenly God meets him. Surely God is in this place and I didn't realize it. It's a story of Moses. And we could go on and on and on. And here is this incident where suddenly, and let's get this right, okay. Some of the boys will speak to me after, I'm sure. Long before Europe ever got a sniff of the gospel, its riches were being known in Africa and in Ethiopia. And here's probably the, we can't be certain, but probably one of the first converts to the gospel in Africa and bringing the gospel of Jesus Christ into the land of Ethiopia. At the very start, it's almost something happens that actually makes you realize that it is absolutely fatal to put Christianity in a box. Because at this juncture, there is a clash here between what I would say the divine wisdom that's found in Christianity that defiles all sorts of logic. What sense was there in Philip being told to go from where he was, a place of ministry, a place of business, a place of fruitfulness, down into the desert? Not knowing who he was going to meet. What's the value in Philip leaving all these sheep, if you like, and going to find one? Well, that's how God works so often. He does the unexpected. He does what we don't think he will do. This very verse says a couple of things you're not a Christian this evening. First of all, it challenges your natural mindset, doesn't it? Here is a verse that says to you, if you want to understand Christianity, you've got to start from a different place. You've got to understand that actually the material world is not all that there is. You've got to understand that the mechanics of the universe, which we know more perhaps about today than any other, and we so often take and build our lives upon, don't we? There's more to life and understanding the world in which we live, the universe, than the mechanics of it. It's actually sound as well, isn't it? If I can paraphrase it. Actually, men and women do not live by economics alone. Isn't that so often the answer? Look, if we can get the economics right, if we can get people materially prosperous, that's what it's all about. And here's what he said, no, wait a minute, but actually, there is something bigger, there is something larger, there's something more going on here. Do you know what our problem is, don't you? If you're not a Christian, here's your problem this evening. It's the fact that you, well, let's put it this way. You in Cornwall, there is that wonderful place called the Eden Project, where there's this large, well, I think it's two, isn't it, glass bubbles. And in spite of the climate that we have here, because it's a glass bubble inside, they grow all sorts of things. A bit like Kew, I suppose, the house is there, you know, the greenhouse is there. We like to think that we understand ourselves and the world in which we live because we live in this bubble. And here is this passage, and here is Christianity saying, actually, do you know what? There is a vast world outside there of which we do not know anything whatsoever. Apostle Paul once put it this way. He said, you know, the things that we can see are temporary. The things that we can't see are eternal. Another illustration. It's a bit like this, isn't it? And I remember when I've only seen one of them. And I remember when I first watched it, I used to sit there and say to my kids, what is all that about? Those Matrix films? I just don't get it. But I get the premise. And the premise is, isn't it, that supposedly in the film, people live in the unreal world. And the real world is that which is outside of what they think is their real existence. And that's the message being proclaimed here. That actually there is this world where God is, that God has made. There is this spiritual realm. There are these spiritual beings. There is this whole plethora of a world outside of what we know in our experience that actually is something that actually governs, directs, changes, and wonderfully intervenes into this world and our lives to change and to bring love and joy and peace and goodness in the person of Jesus Christ. It's a place where Christianity, I suppose, in one sense, confronts our ignorance. One of my children went for a while watching some of these they call them those paranormal type programs. And the one thing that strikes you is the people who do them, how little they know. They have no idea what they're on about. You know, these different things they try to find out. And here is this great Christian message that says, actually, do you know what? There is this great truth. There are these great, this great experience to know that actually the Christian message brings. Paul once put it like this. He wrote to a group of people who thought that they really had worked it all out. And Paul has to tell them as he writes to the Church of Corinth, he says, don't you know that if you're not a Christian, if you're what he described as a natural person, you can't possibly know spiritual things. Because they're hidden from you. They're discerned. You can't actually know them. And of course, that means straight away, how can I understand them? How can I say that Christianity doesn't matter and that Jesus Christ somehow has got no meaning for me if I don't really understand and know what the reality of them is? And here, well, here it is. Here's Philip, taken out of Samaria. taken on this desert road to find this man who at this present moment is returning from his from Jerusalem. A man who is, as you'll see next week, devoutly religious. A man who has begun to think about the real issues of life. Why am I here? What am I to do? What does God want of me? What is God like? And suddenly, here comes Philip and says, actually, do you know what? There's a God out there. In the beginning, God. Before all things were, God was. The God existed in three persons, Father, Son, and Spirit. That they knew together such a joy and a communion and fellowship that they desired above all else to share that in one sense with the creatures that they made. And they brought into being this vast universe in which we live, and that every part of it, every little atom, every piece of it is held together by their will and their control. And they made these vast creatures, this angelic world in which we live, these angels that we speak of. And there is this incredible conflict that now exists between good and evil in this world. And here we are in our glass bubble. And what Luke is reminding us of is this, that God's at work in this world. This revival in Samaria, what was it? It was God at work. This God who was at work in his church, this God who sent Philip, the evangelist, first into Samaria and now on this lonely road to meet this individual. It was God who was breaking in to the world of this particular individual. A number of years ago, we took the children to Paris, to the Disney World. I think I got this one right. And they do this scene where you get in this train and you go, if you've been there, you've probably got it better than me. And you go on this train and you stop, and there's this like big kind of, there's this big old tanker, and there's this big mountain, this house. And suddenly you watch as this lorry it blows up basically, and the mountain blows up and water comes everywhere, and you're watching this spectacle, and once you've watched it through, they stop and they bring it all the way back, and then they show you how it's done. They show you the different techniques and the pyrotechnics, and suddenly it's a whole different scene. What you thought you saw, well, you did see it, but what you didn't see was all that was going on behind it. And that's what's happening here. Do you realize this evening, as inadequate it is, that there is a struggle going on right now in this place? There is a struggle going on between the work of God's Spirit as the gospel of Jesus Christ is made known, and this movement to resist it. There's a struggle going on in your own heart. Why is it, if you're not a Christian this evening, sometimes you're listening to this and sometimes you're, oh, what a load of nonsense. And other times you're not sure what's going on. There is this incredible struggle as God begins to intervene. Three things you notice that God did really through Philip in the life of this man. God took the initiative to seek him out. God intervened to change his life for the better. And then God made an investment. He made an investment in this man's good and this man's future. And that's what the gospel of Jesus Christ does. And Luke doesn't let it go there, because he talks about the angel of the Lord being sent to Philip. And then later on in verse 29, he says that then the Spirit said to Philip, go up, go near to this chariot. And just as he goes near, of course, oh my goodness me, there's a nice giant slice piece of luck, isn't there? This bloke just happens to be reading a portion of the Bible that talks about Jesus Christ. and what he did at Calvary. And Luke tells us that Philip just happened to come near and heard him reading it out aloud. It all seems so nice. No. What's going on? Here is a reminder that when God begins to work, incredible things happen because it's the divine entering into our reality and revealing who he is and his great purposes for us. Someone once said this, trying to analyse the history of the human race. They said, history is a series of breakdowns on the road to progress. Is that your view? History, it's all a matter of chance. We just stumble from one thing to another, and sometimes it works out good and sometimes it works out bad. And it's just a matter of chance. Someone's rolling the dice at there. Oh no, it's just a bubble. Oh no. God knows where he's going and what he's doing. And God's got this way of breaking in when people least expect it. And you know, nowhere is the reality of the supernatural more clearer or more essential than in the work of the cross. Philip goes on to explain to this man why Jesus came, what Jesus did, how Jesus died, and this man finally puts his faith in Jesus Christ. And the cross of Jesus Christ and his work on the cross will never make sense until you see the reality of the supernatural work that goes on beyond it. Let me just point that out in four brief ways, okay? One, how do we understand the place of the cross? Why Jerusalem? Why in the first century? Why did it happen there? Well, the answer that the Bible gives, I'm summing this up quickly, is that in the fullness of time, at the right time, when God was ready, he sent forth his son into the world. But what about the purpose of the cross? What's it all about? What's the purpose of Jesus Christ down on the cross? Is it simply a tragic accident of history? Is it because, you know, Jesus got it wrong and he kind of didn't really take enough notice of what the Jewish leaders were capable of? Was it simply some wonderful example to show us that what we should give? No. Christianity teaches us the purpose of the cross. God was reconciling the world to himself. God had such a love and burden, even for this man, saw him, as it were, and knew him, and knew what sin was doing to his life, that God chose to reconcile himself to this man, to all those who would seek him. That's the purpose of the cross. But what about the person on the cross? Without understanding who the person of Jesus Christ is, the cross becomes almost a, can I dare say, a joke, seemingly? A terrible, terrible, sick joke. But how can you Christians believe? How can you Christians believe that it's possible for one individual human being, in what, shall we say, in 6 hours of intense agony? How can you believe that one individual suffering for 6 hours in intense agony can actually say it extinguishes the reality of a God whose anger and just wrath stands against us? How? It's in the person, you see, isn't it? It's in the fact that it wasn't just Jesus of Nazareth. It was Jesus of Nazareth, the Son of God, who on the cross was bearing the wrath of God for sinners like you and I. You wonder, don't you, when Philip began to explain this to this dear man, how did he get it? How did he understand that this particular passage he was reading, this lamb, this sheep led to the slaughter, that it spoke of Jesus? How did he get it? It's because the Spirit of God was at work. And then there's a proclamation of the cross, isn't there? Why is he sent to this man? Why does he make it known? Why do we Christians, with all our kind of, you know, our kind of idiosyncrasies, why do we make so much of wanting to tell people about the work of the cross? Why? Because it's what God has done. It's a great hope. It's a great demonstration of his love. What sort of God brings a universe like this into being? What sort of God is in control of a world that so often seems to be out of control? It's this great God of love, who loved the world so much that he sent forth his only begotten Son. So why? Why then this evening? Why, as you begin to think, why just focus on this one particular fact of history, that an angel speaks to Philip and sends him in a different direction? Why? Because God, again, is seeking to wake you up to the realities of the unseen, to the certainties of the things that are eternal and durable and will not change. To the fact that Jesus Christ is the only hope that you and I have to know a peace and a certainty about who we are and where we are and how we may know God as our Father and live for him. You may not hear an angel's voice speaking to you this evening, but the reality is, God has done that. He's broken into space and time and done the one thing that no one else could ever do. Friend, are you a Christian this evening? Are you not sure? Is God somehow out there for you? Are you perhaps thinking, well, it's all a bit kind of, it's all a bit airy-fairy, really, power. It's not, it's a bit, you know, I think you've fought them short of a shilling, as we say, but is it? It's interesting, and I'll close with this, that when the great apostle Paul tried to explain how it was that he changed from being this hater of Christians, this persecutor, this devout Jewish religious fanatic, to being this apostle of grace and love that shared the message of Jesus Christ. You know, he said this, and I'll read this to you. This is his own words, and they're found in his letter to the Galatians. And he says this. He said, "But I make known to you, brothers, that the gospel which was preached by me is not according to man. For I never received it from man, nor was I taught it. But it came through the revelation of Jesus Christ. For you've heard of my former conduct in Judaism, how I persecuted the church of God beyond measure and tried to destroy it. And I advanced in Judaism beyond many of my contemporaries in my own nation, being more exceedingly zealous for the traditions of my fathers. But, when it pleased God, who separated me from my mother's womb and called me through his grace to reveal his Son in me, that I might preach him amongst the Gentiles." See what he's saying? There came a moment, he said, there came this time when it wasn't to do with anybody else, any other human, it came this moment when God finally intervened and spoke. And Jesus Christ became real and my Saviour.
That's Christianity. That's Christianity. Is that true for you? Is it true for you this evening? Have you known this experience? Friend, if you haven't, I don't know what you've got. But it's certainly not the authentic message of Christianity. A message that says that the God who is the God who has come, and the God who continues to intervene into our lives to bring his love and his grace and mercy in Jesus Christ to us. Let's pray together.